Whether this is her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct is everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 157, episode 5 of The Daily Zeitgeist, a production of iHeartRadio. This is a podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness. It's Friday, October 30th, 2020. My name's Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Jocula. Ooh, just kidding, guys. It's still me. I'm not the scary ghost. And I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
With so many stories on TDZ, it's kind of hard being Jack and Miles a G, but we somehow, some way, keep saying shit like fuck Fox News like every single day. May I kick a little something for the Zeit Gang? TDZ, shout out to Dan. To in stew rolling blunts, and I'm high right now because Jack and Anna ain't home. Okay, and this motherfucker, this fucking AK keeps going, but I'm gonna just hit the chorus one more time. I am Miles G, smoking homegrown, looking up trending news, faded with my mind on some hot takes and some hot takes on my mind. Shout out to you, Exlocutioner. There we go. A bit of
Exlocutioner,
a
wow.
Exlocutioner.
That's like some lingua franca type shit. That's
you
dope.
Know what I mean? Yeah. Absolutely.
Exlocutioner.
Exlu. Exlu.
Okay. So it's not like elocution.
No. I mean, who knows? We don't know the origin of this name, but we'll give him credit.
Okay. Miles. It's election time. It's COVID time. We're trimming down the format, getting right into all the shit there is to talk about. Today, we are talking about, you know, we're not usually a true crime podcast, but there is a mystery to solve. What happened to Tucker Carlson's documents? We're going to talk about those explosive documents that went missing, as well as just how the GOP just can't quit this Hunter Biden shit. We're going to talk about David Perdue going up against Ossoff in a debate. We're going to talk about the Armenia-Azerbaijan conflict. We're going to talk about Oregon, where their health official announced COVID stats and clown makeup. And we're going to talk about Kim Kardashian's birthday, because that is important.
The full spectrum.
All of that. We might even get to Nickelodeon's presidential election for kids. But first, we'd like to introduce our guest in our third seat. He is a real journalist. He is the host and executive producer of one of our newest shows, Q Clearance. He is the hilarious, the talented, the brilliant Jake Hamrahan! What's up, man?
Hi. Yeah, I'm good, man. I feel like I should start singing or something now, but I'm good. Yeah, how you doing?
Welcome. What's good, man? How has your dive into the world of Q clearance, of the Q conspiracy, been treating your mental health, first of all, let me ask?
It's like so tiring, like constantly having to remind myself about all these weird terms that they've come up with. You know what, the liberating thing with it, once I just let go, like, how can they believe that? How have they tied them two together? When you let go and just go, okay, they do, that's it. It's much easier. You know, you don't find a reason
to it. Right.
Yeah. I always feel like when I'm listening to you kind of give people insight and like just, you know, it's a great primer for the whole Q conspiracy. If you have a parent perhaps who's dabbling and you want to just explain it and like get that shit over with once and for all, it's great for that. But I always feel a little bit of embarrassment because you are not American and this is a uniquely dumbly American product of our culture. So just like hearing you be like, yeah, these motherfuckers.
We've got him now, though. We have like British QAnons as well. Like,
oh, hell yeah.
Just like everything else, you know, you give us that's bad, we've exported that and taken it as well. So, yeah, we've got, you know, we've got obesity from McDonald's and we've got QAnon now as well. So it is what it is, man. But it's been definitely an eye-opener to see the way that, you know, this is accumulated online. But, yeah, it's here to stay for the moment anyway.
Yeah.
Do you think a lot of people who engage in it are using it purely to sort of avoid a reality in which there is like systemic racism and a bungled COVID-19 response? Or do you think like, or is there a split of people who are so dedicated to this very narrowly that it's like, well, yeah, I know that stuff going on, but this Q stuff too is really real.
I'd say the majority of people are very like hardcore dedicated to it. I mean, you'd have to be. The very first prediction completely failed and didn't happen, so to follow it from then on, like, you have to be. But there are certainly, I'd say, even within them hardcore elements, there's a part of it where it's just like, I think with any conspiracy theorist, like, life is quite boring in a way, you know what I mean? Like, often often the even when it's a corruption case, often the details are nowhere near as like dramatic as it would, you know, as it would be if it was on a film or whatever. So it's almost like they just spice up their life a little bit with just bullshit. You know what I mean? Unfortunately.
Wow, right.
And I can kind of see it, you know.
Spice up your life. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, I understand in a way, but it's crazy.
It turns the internet and just, you know, we have this endless amount of information and it uses that to like turn reality into the Da Vinci Code, which is a thing that we know they loved. Yeah. We know Americans love that shit.
Yeah.
All right.
I read that whole book, you know, when I was like 19.
Yeah.
And I got to the end and was like, what the fuck did I do that for? Like, you know,
yeah.
I was like,
why? Me too. I had the exact same response.
So much time.
My I had relatives who really enjoyed it, and I was the only effect it had was me being like, man, they are kind of dumb.
I felt like everyone's like, for me, all my white friends' dads were reading the Da Vinci Code.
Yep.
Yeah. And I was like, all right, I'm good on this.
And then all your white friends' dads are now QAnon subscribers.
You know, I might have to go back and do a little analysis. There may be some overlap.
Might be a connection there. Yeah. All right, Jake, we like to start off by asking our guests, what is something from your search history that's revealing about who you are or what you're up to?
I had a look actually just before, and it was pretty weird. This is weird. One is Frazzle Drip. Do you know what that is?
Mm-mm. No.
So that's the conspiracy theory from QAnons that there's a video of Hillary Clinton cutting off a kid's face and wearing it. Which, yeah, I know it's fucked up.
What
they believe that a video
a fun
like that
name
exists.
For such a horrifying thing.
Yeah. What? So I looked that up.
That sounds like a weird, like, drug term inside the Sesame Street universe.
It's something like that.
Yeah.
Like, what's wrong
with
Oscar?
Elmo. Yeah. Oscar. Like, frazzle drip.
Yeah, it was Frazzle Drip. And then I looked again. It was Suicide Drones. And then the other was Xanax, which I wasn't looking for myself. I can't remember why I searched that, but yeah.
Yeah, that seems to be trending lately. actually,
the two Zeitgeist mentions in the row.
Yeah, two shows
two days
in a row.
Xanax mentions.
Yeah, if we get a Xanax mention on tomorrow's episode, that's going to be the old trifecta. That means to go out and buy Xanax stock.
Yeah, that means GlaxoSmithKline will be our presenting sponsor.
They switched the samples. Sorry, what was the second thing that you searched?
Suicide drone. Yeah.
So can you explain what suicide drones are or why you were searching that?
Yeah, well, it ties into the Armenia-Azerbaijan conflict. There's a lot of them are being used. Some people call them loitering munitions, which I don't know why. I think, you know, it is by its very nature a suicide drone. So it's like essentially a UAV, like unmanned aircraft, but not like the kind of ones that, you know, Obama and Bush was sending out over Yemen. I'm like, these are small ones, right? With like bombs attached to them. And they just, I mean, you see, when they get the target, they just fly into it, right? Like, imagine there was a little, imagine there was like a borrower and he was a kamikaze pilot. It's that basically.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And they're very, very like, I mean, it's almost impossible to get away from them. You know, like you see footage of them and you just see it flying down and then it goes blank. Obviously that's when it's landed. But yeah, right. So I was just kind of researching them and just like, fuck, this is scary, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'd imagine those are easier to kind of pull off and get your hands on, right? Because it doesn't require a giant military grade.
Exactly. Well, weapon. China and like America and Israel, they're all making their own. But I remember like in Iraq, ISIS were making their own, which they were just, you know, like a DJI or DJI, whatever it is, like the little drones you get off Amazon, you put it in your pocket, right? They would get them and they would attach like a mortar round to it, and they had like some mechanical arm, so they were, you know, there was a way they could rig it to let go, and they would just fly above people and just let go, you know, and then the mortar round would drop. And that's what all soldiers were like just terrified of, man, because, you know, you hear zzzz and everybody's running.
Right. Yeah. Wow. And I think the name is so, like, the euphemistic loitering munitions, as if they're like teenagers smoking cigarettes by like a convenience store. What the fuck? Like loitering munitions? Jesus Christ.
There's so many things like that in conflict. And it's like, say what it is, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
But I guess that's how we keep that military industrial complex humming. Where it's like, no, I don't make suicide drones. I make
loitering munitions. Yeah,
that's right.
Don't make this barbecue awkward.
They do have the best barbecues, the military industrial complex.
Oh, yeah. You go to somebody who works for Raytheon. Woo,
yeah,
boy.
They got the good shit. What, Jake, is something you think is underrated?
I was thinking about this, actually, and this is kind of a bit of an abstract one, but I think it's underrated going on websites that aren't social media. Like, I was talking to someone the other day, and I was like, you know, mentioning, and they were like, why do you even have a website? Like, what's the point anymore? I was like, what? Like, there's so many, you know, there's so many cool websites still out there, but all anybody does is just go on social media now. So I think that's definitely underrated. Like, you can find some cool message boards and stuff. I you know, I grew up on the internet, man, and I hate the way social media just ring-fenced it all into this, like, argument. But, underrated. Going on other websites that aren't social media.
Yeah.
What kind of websites are you trafficking? Like, what time are you, what are you heading to get off the social media?
Pornhub? No, I'm joking.
Sponsor like, the show.
like, all sorts of stuff. Like, I was reading a message board the other day about Baofeng radios and ham radio and stuff like that. And it's really nerdy, but I was just looking at it, and it was so cool to just see them in their own little community, completely detached from anyone else. Like, there's no one chirping in and being like, oh, fucking nerds, or like,
right, you know,
vote now or whatever. Like, it was just
mega!
Like
what?
Yeah, right? Like, or some Nazi or whatever. It was just like these guys having some crazy, like, very nerdy conversation about ham radios. And I don't fully understand most of what they were saying, but I guess I just got lost in it, you know, and I was like, oh, this is great.
I do that sometimes with just like plumbing, if there's like a plumbing issue or like some issue I have to figure out around the house, or like finding a manual for something. Like, you go into a forum that's like just super expert, and it's like, I feel like I'm in the 80s all of a sudden.
Right.
Like,
yeah,
yeah,
there's something really nice about it. Sorry.
Yeah. Or you have a question, you go into like a message board and you're like, you know what? I'm gonna engage this message board and I'm gonna dabble. And like everyone's super nice, like doing like the most friendly mansplaining of like an electrical issue. Yeah. They're like, okay, let me walk you through this. I'm like, damn, this motherfucker had 15 minutes to type this like screed, but very informative. And was like very kind. Cause other places, you feel like Reddit, you go to other places where there's like communities going, you ask a dumb question, like, what you just fucking find out yesterday about this shit?
Yeah.
Well, it's nice when you go places and like they want to share the info.
I had a thing on Twitter. I was like asking how to get a radio code for like this shit car that I had. And this guy, I screenshotted it somewhere. This guy was like, kill yourself, dickhead. I was like, okay, thanks. Fucking crazy, man. I was like, oh, Twitter is not the place to ask anything, man.
No, absolutely not.
I thought one of the best metaphors of the of that show, that movie, The Social Dilemma, was them talking about how, like, imagine if when you went to Wikipedia, like, the page just changed depending on what they thought you wanted to read. Like, that's right. And that's what your social media reality is. And that's all anybody uses anymore. Like, that's what's...
Right.
That's what's fucking us
like
over.
There are times when I was like, I thought I used to be more into like street cars. And I'm like, that's just because at a moment I was scrolling a bunch of shit and it kept giving me like this information. It's weird how I found, like, after watching The Social Dilemma, trying to realize how much it was informing like what I was getting interested in, like even very passively. Not that it was like I was getting, you know, radicalized on the internet, but I was like, oh, I'm more into like, you know, Nissan Skyline GTR picks or things like that. And then suddenly and now it's like, oh, do you like fantastic throw blankets? Because I was like cold in my house and I was like, I need a throw blanket. But I'm like, what happened to my Skyline content? I don't know.
Yeah.
It's freaky. Yeah. Shit's freaky.
Your taste in Nissans has always been a little radical.
Well, you know, that's the thing. You know, I had a cousin in Japan who had a Skyline. People don't know this. They don't have them shits in the U.S. They don't know the beauty about that car. I mean, unless you
the old Japanese ones. I love them. You know, like the old Japanese ones, the boxy ones. Yeah, love them, man. Yeah. See, I see a sports car and I'm like, fuck, that's horrible. I see one of them old school 90s boxy Nissans. Love it, mate. Yeah. I'm with you on that.
Especially those the circular tail lights, baby. Woo! Should look like a Batmobile. On a budget.
Definitely.
What is something you think is overrated, Jake?
Borat, the second one. Didn't get the hype. Nah.
It hits different.
It's very on the nose. Yeah, or not all, right? It was very on the nose. And I just found that, like, you know, I could almost excuse the first one when it's like, fuck, I'm glad I'm not from Kazakhstan because I would feel horrible. But then it's like the second one, when he's kind of trying to be like a little bit woke and a little bit clever politically, but then also being like completely destroying Kazakhstan's image. It's like, which part of the joke is that? You know, like, and I love a distasteful joke, but it was like, hang on, you can't have it both ways, right? You can't suddenly be like, oh, I'm this, you know, this liberal guy bringing up this clever satire and also fuck Kazakhstan from where I've never been, you know?
Right,
like,
because it's so poor.
Right, it's poor. And I was a bit like, nah, it's not landing. I thought the daughter was great. I would have rather have watched just a film of Borat's kid, basically, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
But I didn't know. I really... It felt very on the nose to me. I laughed once, and that was when he did the Trudeau thing, when the black Trudeau and the black face. Like, that was funny. I was like, okay, this is funny. But after that, I don't know, man. I think maybe I've just grown up and just become cynical and a prick. You know what I mean? But for me, it just didn't land.
Yeah.
I laughed. Like, the laughs I had weren't the same I used to have, where I was like, oh, wow, this is a really... He's, like, examining the really fucked up parts of our society in this way. Before, I was just like... Oh, he's grossing this crowd out, and that's fucked up. Yeah. And I was more laughing at that more than like, this is brilliant because he's playing with like their feelings of propriety or whatever. I was like, nah, this is just a gross out joke that felt like a good prank. But there was also, I think, given where we are now, or as more people are, you know, more aware of what the country is actually like, it's just sort of like, I don't know.
I just didn't need it, you know? Like, do I need Borat to tell me? Like, not really, you know? Like, maybe people do, you know? But for me, it wasn't the one, man.
When you're neck deep in Q research,
right? But I realized, though, I never really liked Borat anyway. I felt like Ali G was a piss tape because, you know, Sacha Baron Cohen is a very, very elite rich kid, and he was like mugging off like British underclass kids, and I was like, okay. And but I love Bruno. Like I fucking I would love see 10 Bruno is so funny. Like I would watch that 1,000 times. Like I love that. And all that does is just expose people's like homophobia, you know. It's not really hurting anyone else as far as I'm aware.
Yeah, yeah. Some of the Bruno shit that he would do with just not even like exposing homophobia, just like the physical comedy of like being like, okay, now express that to our hearing impaired viewers, but like
go right
big.
With no words.
Yeah, with no words, like, and the guy just like put his hands up in the air. Yeah. Oh shit, that was maybe the hardest I've ever laughed at anything. All right, let's talk real quick about this Georgia debate. Mm-hmm. Senator David Perdue, which is probably not how he talks, but so we'll go with that.
He's one of those senators, you know, who got caught dumping stock back in February.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it's because he just had one of those Wall Street precogs in his basement who just knew when the market would crash and just told him. And it wasn't anything to do with his access to pandemic related research or information as a sitting United States senator that affected his stock dumping. Either way, he was investigated for it. It's a big deal. He's running against John Ossoff. And right now they are in a deadlocked race, which a lot of people, you know, Georgia has become more and more purple, veering on maybe blue based on like, you know, the slight advantage Biden has. But that's with polls. And that's when like things like votes are counted. So we don't know what that means quite yet. But in this debate, John Ossoff, it's just refreshing again. Like, I know there's a lot of things going on, but sometimes we just have to take a second to breathe when you just have like John Ossoff, who's just, you know, likable guy. And he's just doing that thing where he's debating like a, you know, a Republican senator who's more just like a skin sack powered by petrodollars. And then you have John Ossoff, who's just going to be like talk very straight up to him. And this, he just starts off with this one. And this had everybody on Twitter being like, oh, wow, this is a sad, sad state of debate.
Senator Perdue would have been able to respond properly to the COVID-19 pandemic if you hadn't been fending off multiple federal investigations for insider trading. It's not just that you're a crook, Senator. It's that you're attacking the health of the people that you represent. You did say COVID-19 was no deadlier than the flu. You did say there would be no significant uptick in cases. All the while, you were looking after your own assets and your own portfolio, and you did vote 4 times. To end protections for pre-existing conditions.
So this whole time, David Perdue, he's doing this thing where he's trying to be straight-faced, even though he's getting fucking straight ethered on the debate stage, where he's like...
just like rocking
and
back
like,
and forth.
He's like,
I swear I have something to say. If it weren't for this damn debate format, I'd be defending myself.
Hey, can I go ahead and lie real quick? Okay, so what John Ossoff just said is a fake. Okay,
right.
That didn't
happen.
I mean, like, it's really, really bad. So they go on later on. He's saying, like, I did vote for this and that, and it just fell very flat. Then Ossoff goes off on Perdue once again because, dude, Perdue, like a lot of these Republicans now in the Trump era, are just, you know, they've left the dog whistles at home and they're just straight bullhorning their racism or anti-Semitism, xenophobia, whatever phobia. And John Ossoff also has some energy for that and just, again, dismantles him.
This is so beneath the office of a U.S. senator. You've continued to demean yourself throughout this campaign with your conduct. First, you were lengthening my nose in attack ads to remind everybody that I'm Jewish. And then when that didn't work, you started calling me some kind of Islamic terrorist.
Jesus.
And then when that didn't work, you started calling me a Chinese communist. It's ridiculous. And you shouldn't do everything that your handlers in Washington tell you to, because you'll lose your soul along the way, Senator.
Eviscerated
in such a calm way.
Like, yeah, I love that.
That shit is just...
And Perdue is just up there again, looking straight ahead into camera like, uh-huh. Yeah, I guess I did do all this. Well, yeah, he was altering photos of Ossoff to make his nose look... He's doing this like really blatant, just nasty shit. But, you know, we shall see. what the good people of Georgia decide on election day, but it's definitely tightening, and there was really not much, you know, Purdue could say to defend against that of just being like, oh, I don't know.
So Purdue, you know, has been in the lead, and Ossoff is like kind of closing the gap, that sort of deal.
Yeah, like it's gotten tighter and tighter and tighter now. And the other race with Kelly Loeffler, I mean, she's the Democrat is probably going to is definitely making it to the runoff in January. But yeah, it doesn't look good for Republican senators in the state of Georgia at the moment. Mm.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. We will be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan, and if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island, and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty: Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, guys. I'm home.
Everyone knows that it's Dad's job to be a bit of a joker.
Sorry I'm late, everyone. There was an accident at the factory. Monty fell into the upholstery machine. Don't worry, though. He's fully recovered.
Good one, Dad.
Did you get the pizza for dinner?
So he likes to keep everyone happy with some dad jokes.
Yep, right here. I had a coupon, and it saved me a lot of dough.
Well, the truth is, Dad is just a fun guy.
Hey, I'm not a mushroom.
Please stop. Where does he get these stupid jokes from?
He listens to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast.
Oh, great. More dad jokes for me.
We've delivered over 15,000 jokes to over 3 million listeners, and man, the postage fees are killing us. Listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. And the Republican Party, the president's committee to reelect himself, cannot quit this Hunter Biden shit. They are back on it. Rudy had that interview with Kennedy a couple days back in which he claimed he had explosive diarrhea or explosive evidence
that shows
Bidens are in cahoots with a Chinese spy master.
That was even hard to watch by Rudy standards when we saw Kennedy look at him and be like, really, Rudy? And he really had that energy, Rudy, where he's like old man at a buffet insisting that his 17-year-old coupons are still valid, like to the manager. Like, that's what he sounds like when he's trying to spread these smears. And I was like, I'm telling you, there's an expiration. This doesn't, I'm sorry, sir. And so, you know, Steve Bannon, also another person who's been doing his best to bang the whatever conspiracy drums he can on his media appearances, podcasts. And now Tucker Carlson has, I don't know, I guess won the award for one of the saddest attempts at manufacturing a controversy because he claims he has these explosive documents that will just fucking put an end to Hunter Biden. But here's the thing. FedEx stole them. So we should be talking about that. It's such a weird dud of a thing that he did last night. I'm just going to play part of his opening.
The clip is amazing.
Where he's really trying to let people know, like, guys, if it weren't for, I can't mention that the guy who runs FedEx is a huge Trump donor. So he also won't call out FedEx by name. So he's in a really tough spot trying to like smear whatever slash not get in the way of FedEx's business. But here is Tucker Carlson with his just a caper.
My executive producer, Justin Wells, and I were in Los Angeles preparing to interview Tony Bobulinski about the Biden's business dealings in China, Ukraine, and other countries. So we texted a producer in New York, and we asked him to send those documents to us in L.A., and he did that.
The only copies
of this week, he shipped those documents overnight to California with a large national carrier, a brand name company that we've used, you've used countless times.
FedEx.
Single problem. But the Biden documents never arrived in Los Angeles. Tuesday morning, we received word from the shipping company that our package had been opened and the contents were missing. The documents had disappeared. Now, to its credit, the company took this very seriously and immediately began a search. They traced the envelope from the moment our producers dropped it off in Manhattan on Monday all the way to 3:44 a.m. yesterday morning. That's when an employee at a sorting facility in another state noticed that our package was open and empty.
Okay, so this goes on where he starts giving a play-by-play about how, like, he's like,
they looked for it.
Interviewed every single person who may have interacted with it. And they have
a warehouse.
Yeah. And then so after all that, right, because this was all just a setup, presumably to be like, yo, Hunter Biden is on some bullshit. But it just turns into like a FedEx lost our damning evidence. He kind of cuts to the chase towards at the end because we're like, what is this all about, Tucker? And then so now he's trying to, I guess, build some kind of conspiracy from this.
Those documents have vanished. As of tonight, the company has no idea and no working theory even about what happened to this trove of materials, documents that are directly relevant to the presidential campaign just 6 days from now. We spoke to executives at that company a few hours ago. They seemed baffled and deeply bothered by this. And so are we.
Okay. On Wonkat, they're quick to point out, obviously, that I don't know if you remember Tucker, the lawyers for Fox are saying Tucker Carlson is not a journalist. Okay, he just says some shit. It's like performance art. So you can't actually hold him accountable by any sort of journalistic standard about what he says. So yeah, okay. Well, with that in mind, and I look at this, I'm like, what is... It doesn't even make sense, right? If you had these documents, why don't you send a PDF?
Copies. You wouldn't have scanned them in and sent a PDF. You wouldn't have...
It only
makes sense to people over the age of 65 who are like used to a world where like everything isn't digitized and, you know, immediately backed up, especially something that is like election altering and important. It only makes sense if your brain still exists in the early 80s, basically.
Right. Oof, I'm surprised. I mean, again, if it was that important, Tucker, it feels like something you would actually say to an older parent. You're like, why would you mail that? Just scan it, take a photo or something.
I was thinking
the social security card.
It would literally be quicker to take a picture of every single page and send it.
I haven't put something in the mail in 10 years without taking a picture of it with my phone. Like, I always do that because what if the mail loses it? You got to like have some evidence that you put it in the mail. they didn't think to do that. And I think that raises questions about Tucker Carlson's show and whether they're in cahoots with the Biden campaign.
Yep. Exactly, because it looks like Tucker Carlson is willfully hiding evidence of improprieties that are occurring on the Biden side of things. So I don't know. Maybe Tucker Carlson's a lib. I don't know what's going on. But it's all just part of this undying just dedication to this October surprise where like they're so rigidly still like locked into the Hillary Clinton mindset of like, let's get something with emails and the FBI and something else. And then that's how voters will somehow ignore the last, 3.5-4 years of this administration or something like that.
Right. It's just not working for them.
I would love to go out on the town with Hunter Biden. Like, that's all I got to say.
Oh,
like
absolutely.
A fun guy to go out with, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. No. They're going after the wrong person, too. Like, where most people, like, Hunter Biden is relatable. Like, most American people know somebody who's, or like has struggled with any kind of substance abuse issues. And you're like, oh man, right. Like, that's not
the whatever. Whole of America. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, right, exactly. Right. And like, now that, like, but the way Trump is talking about it, I was like, this guy's a bum, huh? Can you believe it? Joe Biden said he loved his addict son. What the fuck, America? You want this soft ass as a president? You're like, what? The fuck? Most people statistically have probably encountered something like this in their life more than even like half the other bullshit that he spews. But I guess we should keep in mind too that Rudy and Steve Bannon also have some legal liability, so they would be doing their best to try and keep this president in office in case they needed some kind of pardon, whether that's Rudy's foreign lobbying work that has still gone unresolved, or Steve Bannon's build the wall fraud festival. Where he's got like what $25 million out of thin air. So,
can the president, like, assuming there's not a massive polling error, I still am very worried about Pennsylvania, and Pennsylvania is the swing state, and the polling is like very tight in Pennsylvania. But just in the scenario where Trump loses, can he act more unaccountable? Like, can he be like? He's acted so far like he doesn't know that anybody like could be paying attention and prosecuting him. But like, if he's a lame duck president, like just dropping fucking pardons left and right, like it's going to be a sight to behold if we actually come to that point.
Yeah, and I'm sure there'll be some executive orders and things like that, like spite orders on the way out. If, again, that assumes that we get to Tuesday and it's not outright rat fuck fest 2020 when it comes to counting ballots and things like that, because we're already seeing, a lot of tense, ballot counters and things like that, hoping that we get through this somewhat scot-free. But yeah, I mean, who knows? I don't think there's any limit to what he'll attempt, especially, we see what he looks like when he has his back against the wall, and he'll bring everything down with him.
Yeah. But Pennsylvania is going to be a complete fucking rat fuck fest there, because they can't start counting until the day of the election. So it's going to look like Trump won a blowout when everybody goes to bed on election night.
We'll see. Who knows? Hey, come on now. Let's live in the present. And then we'll deal with that shit when it creeps up on our doorstep.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Armenia-Azerbaijan conflict. I feel like the mission of our show is to look at the American zeitgeist. But, we also, I feel like there is generally a... Like, stories like this should be part of the American zeitgeist, right? Like, the America should care more about conflicts that are happening overseas that don't directly involve the American military. But Miles, you were pointing out that the LA Times has been doing some reporting, and it's kind of intersected with just stuff you're seeing with your own friends.
Yeah,
in terms of this conflict.
In LA, the most Armenians living outside of Armenia reside in Southern California. So I've grown up around Armenian people, playing sports with like hockey teams, my high school, my personal life, my godchildren. They're, if you're in LA, you know about the Armenian experience. And about a month ago, I saw all the flags come out. Normally, it's on April 24th, marking the genocide, but the flags started coming out in force, and I did not know what was going on. I started seeing this hashtag of Art Sock Strong. I'm like, what is happening? Then I look around, and you realize that it's going off over this very contested region, which Armenia and Azerbaijan had fought over in the late 80s, early 90s. So from there, I was like, okay, so this is a hotly contested region. I've known it even like from soccer, because on Arsenal, we had an Armenian player named Henrik Mkhitaryan, who's Armenian. We were playing the Europa League final in Azerbaijan, and it was very controversial because he was saying he did not want to play in Azerbaijan because of the Karabakh region. And so it was like, so I was like, damn, this is a lot is swirling around here. And now in the LA Times, because of the communities that are in this city, we are starting to see a lot of men and women leaving Los Angeles to go to Armenia to fight. Because for a lot of Armenians who have been displaced, they look at the reason being in Los Angeles or outside of Armenia as an extension of unstable relations in that region over their lifetimes. And going back has been like a no-brainer. Like there are people who are saying like, I have to go back, even though I've lived in the U.S. most of my life. My connection is still to this land across the world that I still feel the need to defend. And the more you look into it, it is just a harrowing conflict where people, the loss of life is just, it's massive. And we're not really talking about it in this country because, A, I think for obvious reasons, there is an election going on. So now Americans, or at least the media, goes, the only thing that exists is this horse race. But meanwhile, I'm looking at my city and I'm seeing a lot of pain. I'm seeing a lot of suffering. I'm seeing a lot of hurt people. I see Armenian Americans getting all of their resources together to try and send back to Armenia to help people on the front lines of this conflict. And I'm just like, I think we're doing ourselves a disservice by ignoring it. I'm certainly doing myself a disservice by not talking about it because I see it affecting my community in Los Angeles and the broader, you know, in the globe. So I think, Jake, what's great about having you here is that you cover global conflict. On your Twitter feed, I see you post a lot about this conflict as well. So I figured it'd be great to just, from your perspective, give people a bit of background on this and just how quickly this is devolving.
Yeah, man. I mean, to give you, this is grim, but to give you an idea of how quickly this is devolving, I mean, it's what, a month old now. There's been one beheading, and as Azerbaijani soldier beheaded an Armenian guy, filmed it, you know, put it on the social media. And then the other day, the Azeri soldiers kind of captured two Armenians. One was an old man, he was in his 70s, and the other was like, lad was like 25. They wrapped an Armenian flag around them and then just executed them, like shot them, filmed it, put that on social media. And then there was footage the other day of Armenian soldiers had killed an Azeri soldier and like answered his phone, and it was his family, and they're like, yeah, your son's dead. Like, to give my point is, it's very, very extreme, very grim, very fast, you know what I mean? But it was always going to be this way because of the situation. Now they're essentially fighting over contested land, and annoyingly, you know, the UN has said, oh well, that land is kind of officially Azerbaijan's. So then everyone says, oh, well, the UN said we can have it. And it's like, who cares what the UN said? Like, the UN ignores war crimes all the time. You know what I mean?
Right.
I don't think they're legitimate in that sense. And then you've got Azerbaijan with loads and loads and loads of money, loads of money on military spending. Turkey is backing them up, sending Syrian mercenaries to fight for Azerbaijan. They've already parked two Turkish F-16 planes. They just dropped a load of these suicide drones. And then if you look at the Armenians, like, their spending is minuscule compared. They're a very poor country in that respect. And you've just got, like, the whole community, like you said, just people just going and being like, we have to go and fight. I mean, the Prime Minister, Nikolai Pashinyan, he said the other day, like, we'll fight to the end now. Like, basically, I think he realized no one is coming to help. Russia kind of meant to help Armenia, but they don't really care. So I think he just realized, like, we just, you know, we'll fight to the end. It's not helpful talk, but that's the desperation, right? Like, he's told everybody, if you can pick up a rifle, pick one up and go to the region. So I think it's very weird to see that modern day kind of vibe that happening in these two countries, and then for it to be mostly ignored, especially when it can, you know, I mean, essentially you've got Turkey, which are helping Azerbaijan, a NATO country, which obviously America is a part of. Azerbaijan have literally said they want to genocide people. Like, I'm not exaggerating. They've literally said, like, officially, like, yes, we will wipe them all out. Like, we want to get rid of every single Armenian on this land. In fact, in 2005, I think it was the foreign minister was in Germany, of all places, and said, you see what you guys, the Nazis, did to the Jews? We want to do that to Armenians. Literally said that. It's official. You can look it up. So there's no misconception about what is going to happen there. And like you said earlier, like, you know, Genocide Watch, I think they put it up to level 9, whatever that means, but basically saying this is going to be very, very bad if the Azeri soldiers get to where they're trying to go. Now, I'm not trying to act like, oh, the Armenians are these, you know, complete angels. They're not. It's a war. War's grim and nasty. I mean, today, Armenia used cluster munitions on people in Azerbaijan, which is a big no-no. You know, it's I think it's a war crime, actually, technically, in the UN's eyes. I don't know. So, yeah, it's grim, but war is grim, and war is fought by, you know, brutal violence. But essentially, Azerbaijan did start this offensive a month ago. You know, I've been following this very closely for years, not just now. Like, on my podcast, Popular Front, we did a episode about Nagorno-Karabakh 3 years ago, basically saying this is what will happen if the war kicks off. And, it, you know, we were right. So it's very, very grim. It's happening very fast. And like you said, it's pulling in diaspora. It's pulling in different countries where, like, you know, Russia has a base in Armenia, but they supply weapons to Azerbaijan, Turkey, NATO, everything. So it's a big mess, man. And it's worrying. Right. It's going to go bad, I think.
And we're also even starting to see people like audition drones in this battlefield. Like, we're starting to see this new, like, what the new era of drone warfare is starting to look like, with like a lot, because they're getting drones from Russia or Israel or Turkey and things like that, where now it's like, well, it's also grim to see like how quickly the fighting is even evolving technologically too. From like, you know, from the 90s, we used to think of like, oh, it's like small munitions fire and like mortars, and now we're talking about these kinds of drones. And yeah, it's really harrowing. And I think for me, what really breaks my heart is, like, I think in the US, right, we have an attention span for global suffering that is like very, very narrow. But this is like one of those moments, I think, for especially for people in LA, if you have your eyes open and know people in the Armenian community, like, it's really fucked up to even think, right? These are people I grew up with who are now saying, like, yo, my cousins just left to go fight. And I'm like, didn't they grow up in the valley? They're like, yeah, but this is the purpose now of our lives. Yeah. When you hear people say that my life's purpose has become very clear suddenly, you feel sick, you feel awful, you want to help, you don't know what's wrong with your own country, because there's, you know, we saw that there was a ceasefire brokered, but that fell apart like within an hour, I feel like.
There's been three ceasefires, none of them lasted more than like 10 minutes. It's crazy.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's also like, yeah, I feel like Azerbaijan has done a great job of, you know, greenwashing a lot of their actions around the world, where you can see like some people aren't really talking about it with the full breadth of facts that they should be. And it's, yeah, that's another part that I think is really fucked up, is that people are also getting very, you know, unbalanced presentations of what the situation is.
You, no, you're right. And also because Azerbaijan has a lot more money to spend on that, you know, the sock puppet accounts, all of that influence in the media. Right. I mean, Jesus Christ, the other day, the official Instagram account of Azerbaijan McDonald's was promoting the war, literally saying, like, go soldiers, like, McDonald's, like, what the fuck? And the problem is, you know, people say to me, oh, well, you're biased to this, you're biased to Armenia. And I'm saying, it's not biased to point out one side has literally said we want to genocide someone. That's literally the truth. If Armenia does something bad, we discuss it as well. I say, whoa, why do they use, you know, cluster munitions? But when one side is literally saying we want to genocide you, and the Armenians have already been through a genocide, which NATO's second largest country, or NATO's second largest army, Turkey, denies ever happened, having done it. Like, you got to say, this is not good. Like, this is going very bad. And you're talking about, like, you know, you're seeing people leave from LA. Well, we saw something in Europe last night, a different reversal role, I guess. The diaspora Turkish and Azeri community got together last night in Lyon and went on a lynch mob. There was hundreds of them walking through the streets, smashing things, saying, come out, you Armenian dogs. And they just started attacking, like, Armenian people. Like, this is crazy. Like, this is seriously getting out of hand, you know? And I'm not saying, oh, bad, good. There is no good and bad in war. It's just all bad, you know? But at the end of the day, you have to point out what's going wrong. Yeah, it's no use saying, well, what about this side? What about that side? When we're talking about literal genocide. And I don't use that word lightly. People always use that word. And often it's like, no, that was a mass murder, or it wasn't even that, you know. But this, it could be, you know, like we said, the government in Azerbaijan is like, yeah, we want to do a genocide. Like, right. What can you do? It's fucked.
Yeah. On the limit of the U.S. news consumer's imagination, part of me thinks you need to like really put them in the position of the people in the war. Like one of the best ways that I've heard somebody get people to care about a foreign conflict was actually in Robert Evans's It Could Happen Here, because he was using like foreign conflicts as a metaphor for what could happen in the United States. And I just wonder, like, the way Death of Stalin just made everyone an English speaker with like mannerisms and affectations that we could all understand culturally. I wonder like if that's sort of how we need to be thinking about getting Americans to care. Like, even though it sounds incredibly dumb, and like it's like, well, if it's that hard to hold their hand, then like, you know what, maybe just fuck them. But at the same time, it is like so, I don't know, it's so easy to relate to if you just get past a certain point. Mm. I just think there's a short circuit that happens when they hear a foreign city name, they hear a foreign country name, and Americans, especially like modern Americans, have lived their lives completely dissociated from being near any sort of war. Like, even the wars that America has fought have been distant, and, you know, only happening on the news. And I think the American brain has just learned to just be like, well, that's something that happened somewhere else. I can short circuit that, turn it off. But first of all, it's not that far from where we are at this moment politically. And second of all, I think there's a way to get them to understand like this would be like if, you know, U.S. states went to war with one another, like just like in terms of the size of the state, in terms of the population, like in terms of the interstate rivalries, like they're not quite that bad. But we battle them out on like stupid, like getting drunk and watching football games. But like, you know, I do think that there's like corollaries that could help make it make sense to people.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I don't know enough about America really to think what the comparison would be, but I know what you mean. And I think that's, it's not just America as well. I think for a lot of people, I understand, you know, like people working 60, 70 hours a week, like breaking their neck, they haven't got time. You know, you can't expect them to always do it. But like you said, it's like, I think you're saying as well, I think if there is like hell going on in the world and you're in a peaceful place, relatively, you should, it's kind of, you're obliged to at least know that it's happening, I think, you know, just to your fellow man, your fellow woman, right? It's like, you should know that these people are living through hell and that there's fighting going on. But I've found that that's not a good enough way to get people to care for my work. The way I've always approached it with my, like, reporting, specifically my documentaries, is we spend a lot of time around the people. It's not like go to the front line and then fuck off. It's like, no, we you know, when I was filming with Kurdish militants, we lived with them, we slept with them, we ate with them, not like that, but you know what I'm saying? We were with them all the time. And, you know, when you see the documentaries, it's like, oh, right, they're just like me, but they're just unfortunately in a place where war is on their doorstep.
Right.
You know, these are young men and women that would rather be playing PlayStation or doing sports or going to school. But unfortunately, they don't have that that privilege to do so. So, you know, people have this idea that like, oh, balaclava or gun or whatever. And it's like, oh, the big bad guy, or it's terrorism or whatever. Like, often it's just people that are like, fuck, I'm going to lose. Like, my mum won't have anywhere to live if we lose this land, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think when you kind of knock it down to that very basic level of like, how would you feel if your grandparents, you know, didn't have a house anymore? Like, it's literally that. I mean, in 2016, there was what they call the four-day war. This Nagorno-Karabakh conflict between Armenia and Azerbaijan flared up again. Within 4 days, Yazidi soldiers beheaded a young Armenian Yazidi man and broke into the home of two old people and cut off their ears. which was like an old kind of brutal thing that used to happen in the 90s, you know? So it's that, like, imagine that happening to your grandparents, right? Imagine that happening to your friend, like, oh, he's gone to war, now they cut his head off, or whatever, you know? Or the other day, or let's even the other side, the other day there was a video of some Armenian, like, gun-butting a guy to death that they'd captured. It's just horrific, you know what I'm saying? It's like, it's so grisly, and it's worth knowing, like, you know, no, normal people are forced into these situations. Yeah. No one wants to be at war. They didn't choose it, but it is what it is.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan, and if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island, and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty: Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, I'm home.
Everyone knows that it's Dad's job to be a bit of a joker.
Sorry I'm late, everyone. There was an accident at the factory. Monty fell into the upholstery machine. Don't worry, though. He's fully recovered.
Good one, Dad.
Did you get the pizza for dinner?
So he likes to keep everyone happy with some dad jokes.
Yep, right here. I had a coupon, and it saved me a lot of dough.
Well, the truth is, Dad is just a fun guy.
Hey, I'm not a mushroom.
Please stop. Where does he get these stupid jokes from?
He listens to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast.
Oh, great. More dad jokes for me.
We've delivered over 15,000 jokes to over 3 million listeners, and man, the postage fees are killing us. Listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. And there's this very surreal video that's also kind of making a lot of sense. An Oregon health official went on and announced COVID stats in clown makeup.
Yeah.
Claire Poche or Poach.
It just feels, again, very 2020. this It's, you know, public access TV. She works for the Oregon Health Authority, and she's announcing COVID statistics in, like, old-timey, like, boxcar clown makeup.
Yeah.
And I'm just, for people who were watching the video, but just imagine that the voice saying this is dressed in just a really cool clown outfit.
As of today, there have been 38,160 cases of COVID-19 in Oregon, with 390 new cases being reported today. Sadly, we are also reporting 3 deaths today, bringing the statewide total for COVID-19 related deaths to 608.
Yeah.
It's so strange. Everyone has so many questions about this. They're saying, why, like, at a certain point, you'd be like, oh, wait, hold on. Claire's about to do the announcement in clown makeup. Okay, tag in an intern or fucking right. anyone else. So it doesn't look like sort of how the U.S. is responding to this, like in a very like with buffoonery and like this disconnection to reality. And other people were like, well, you know, it's like Halloween. So I get it. Maybe people are like doing costume stuff.
What?
This video was recorded on October 14th. So this is 2 weeks out. So I don't know what's going on. It's just.
Has she not said why?
No. They're what the fuck? Like when they were asked, the officials from the department were like, it's just a costume. That's it. That's all that was. And like no other comment. She's wearing a costume. Yeah, I don't know. It's just so on brand for this year, that visual. But yeah, just thought I had to bring that up because everything is so surreal.
I thought this story was like about a piece of performance art where she was like being like kind of just this is what our government is like a complete clown show. But the fact that she's just been like, yeah, no, I don't know. Just thought it was some wild shit to rock right? in this video.
Yeah, what? I'm a clown. What?
Yeah. Wait, what's the problem? Hold on. Get past it. This is a costume. Or did you hear what I said about COVID infections?
Oh,
it's
my
such
God.
A. Yeah. And even then, like, apparently in the full clip, Claire never talks about the costume. Like, never is like, please pardon. You know what I mean? Like, you'd feel like if you were aware, you'd be like, I'm terribly sorry about my appearance for this. So I've just. Or you would just be like, hi, camera person, just go to the person who's doing the sign language interpretation. Just focus on that. Maybe just give me a still photo. Right, you don't have to show me animated, but
it's so weird.
It is what it is.
I mean, this is legitimately a bit that Will Ferrell did when we were announcing the like joint venture podcast network we launched with him.
Right.
Yeah, at the upfront where like you announce like what your upcoming slate is to advertisers, our CEO was like, and here's Will Ferrell to talk about to announce something. And he just got on and did like a very straightforward like announcement of why he was excited about the podcast space, but he had like just very strange clown makeup on and never addressed it at all. And it was like very funny, but
amazing
this is,
bit.
Yeah, yeah, an amazing bit that this
in the context
feels,
of it, yeah.
Yeah, feels contextually a little bit like a little bit of a stranger use of that bit.
Maybe she's trying to bring attention to her state or something,
right? That could that
you
that
think
would
she
make
would
sense.
Tell
right?
you by now,
right? Yeah, unless she did,
or
it.
Or you're really living it, that shit. You know?
Yeah,
she's too busy to travel in the rails with a bindle stick to
yeah yeah. Oof.
Maybe that was like she was making a big political statement, but then her higher ups were just like, shut up. And so she hasn't been able to explain it. I don't know.
Maybe.
All right. Let's talk Kim Kardashian. This is just yet another kind of glimpse into the world of celebrity. It's almost like a portal from 3 years ago. These famous, very wealthy people are still living in the world that built them. Mm-hmm. You know, she got famous. She got extremely wealthy doing shit like this, like living a wild, luxurious lifestyle, giving us tours of her like $20 million home that like has sinks without sink basins. And before like just a couple of years ago, that's what we pointed to. We were like, ah, that place looks weird, rather than like, you know, just how brutally unequal our culture is, our society is. But this was especially tasteless. So
yeah.
Kim, for her 40th, took, I don't know, like 100 of her closest friends to a Tahitian island, probably spent millions of dollars doing this. It looked like millions of dollars. And then posted about it in detail on social media, just loads of pictures of everybody partying together with no masks on, except for the waiters who had to wear masks because they were risking their lives to, you know, wait on these people. But yeah, I don't know. Like I understand the tone deafness because she built a career doing shit like this.
Yeah, but it's weird. They haven't gotten the note yet, which is so odd. They still think it's 2019 and like the celebrity worship shit is still, you know, at the, like firing at the same level it used to. I think the Imagine video was the first opportunity for a lot of celebrities to be like, okay, absolutely, we need to shut the fuck up, hide, and not show, reveal any dimension of how our lives are as like the hyper privileged, you know, luxury life leading people we are. Yet there's still like this thing where it's still like there's still the flex, like the celebrities still need to do the flex and people don't, they're not reading the room. The flex is dead. The flex is vulgar and the flex has now become violent. And by being like, I don't know, 40 and feeling so humbled, there's like, I think there's a moment in her like tweet thread where she's like, I realize how most people in times like this aren't able to do that. So I'm super humbled by my privilege. As if that's like
humbled by my, I'm humbly reminded of how privileged my life is.
Oh, gosh, man, leave it alone.
You know where she is. I read today that, so where they had the party, it per capita, it's the third worst place for having COVID. So it's like,
oh shit,
yeah.
Really?
So it's, God knows how many people maybe have got infected and spread it to who knows who after the back of it. You know, it's just irresponsible on so many levels as well, you know, even medically, I think.
Absolutely. There's this, I don't know when they're gonna realize that the balance has completely shifted in terms of like the aesthetic that people find appealing and those they find just angering, you know. And when we're living in a country, especially the United States, where the federal government has completely turned its back on working people and those who are unemployed, or even only certain municipalities are like, okay, maybe we shouldn't evict people in a time where many people aren't able to work, that to then flaunt this like private jet bullshit where like everyone's being like, essentially just distills to, we're so rich, we can fucking erase everything that's happening in your poor people life existence and keep our shit going, because guess what? The show don't stop for a hoe. We keep it going, and like these people will wear masks because they're working people, and God forbid we spend all this money to act like nothing's going on that we get sick. It's just really, I feel like the smart, if you're smart, if you're a celebrity, because I know so many A-list celebrities listen to this podcast, just fucking hide, because people's attitudes are changing very rapidly to the like this have and have nots culture we have. And most people are not being like, it would be sick if I had that. Most people are like, I'm gonna fucking eat you.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Do you know what I noticed as well? I think you've really hit the nail on the head there. But what I noticed, especially amongst friends, it went from realizing have and have not is actually us versus them. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, because if you can use it to be like, let's have a more just society, let's educate people on there is another way, or we can be fairer, we don't have to be like hyper-capitalist celebrity lunatics. Like, I think this might be a good thing where people stop trying to obtain that wealth and celebrity. Maybe not, but I think there's certainly people that have shocked me have been like, fuck like Kardashian or fuck whoever. Whereas before, I wouldn't have thought they'd said that. So, right. But no, I agree with you completely, man. It's such a fucking deaf moment, right?
When did she become famous? Like, when did their family? It was like during the 2010s. Like, that's when. Because
you mean the sex tape? Well, first she was Paris Hilton's. She was Paris Hilton's BFF, and she was getting in the background with a lot of club shots when Paris was going to the party, and they were like, "Who is Paris's new friend with the dark hair?" And they're like, that's Robert Kardashian, OJ's lawyer's daughter, Kim. And then the sex tape got her like her own lane. And then from there, you know, one thing just led to another. Boom, boom, boom. Because for a while, I think it was we were living at a point like in American culture where it was just easy to just dismiss all the ills of the country, to just be like, nah, yeah, maybe I'm being underpaid and overworked, but I go on, I pop on E, and I escape to my world where, oh my God, Scott Disick is a mess, and Mason is so cute. And right. Now, when as things just become more vivid about like the sickness that exists in our country, especially with like the worship of material goods and items, that you look at this and you're like, this offers me no comfort anymore. This actually is angering. And to your point, Jake, like, yeah, like, it's hopefully will erode this like false class solidarity a lot of people have with celebrities by being like, right. Well, leave her alone. Where now people are like, the replies to Kim Kardashian's those tweets, I think, say it all, where people are like, hey, asshole, like, I haven't seen my family in months because they're elderly, and I also can't afford to go there because I have no job. But yeah, do you on your fucking island.
Yeah. I feel like when we look back years from now, like this period from like when Paris Hilton became famous to 2020 will be the period that like looks very strange, you know, that doesn't make, because like in the 90s and 80s, like I always talk about this like concept of like selling out being a thing that people thought was a bad thing. And then like it just went away. Like people just, you know, like, Kurt Cobain was like mortified that he was wealthy. And like, I think, yeah, I just think there's a returning awareness. Like we're waking up from this dream where it was just pure aspirational bullshit. And now it's back to reality. Like where in the early 90s, people were like, yeah, you can sell out. Selling out is a bad thing. Like that's not cool.
Well, yeah, I think we've reached the end of the drug trip of like worshiping these status symbols, you know,
right.
Because we completely burnt it out to the point where now it's like you see it, that it's all vaporware. Like it's not real. Yeah. It's just it was some shit to comfort you about maybe what your own future is. And I think as more people get with the reality, like, man, I'm not going to be some fucking influencer driving around 900 Lamborghinis. Like, that's fucking stupid. Like, I would just like to own a little piece of land and have my kids get educated and not have to worry about like my health care. Because right now I live in a country where I could be killed by the police, have no health insurance, and people are dragged out of their homes because they're from some other place. Like, that's what's becoming very real to a lot of people. So, yeah, I mean, you know, down with the Kardashian bullshit, you know, we'll see what replaces it.
Something else that I just want to mention quickly is that I've noticed in my country, in Britain at least, like class is becoming more recognized again. You know, like when I was a kid, class was a very big issue. It wasn't about like, you know, it's like if you're class, whatever, you're all together. Now, a good thing that the kind of, you know, like the kind of woke celebrity stuff, I know a lot of people are like, fuck them. Like, you know what I mean? Right. Like, you can't say that because you're so rich. You don't know what it's like with me, you know, Tim and Youssef and whoever else, you know? So in my country, I've noticed, which I think is a good thing, you know, like, you know, solidarity with each other. Like, hey, we're both fucking poor. We don't need to hate each other. It's them who are lying, you know? And I think that can only be a good thing personally, so long as it's, you know, constructive.
Right. And I think, because for other people who are like, man, you know why our situation's so bad in whatever ex-American city, and they go like, because of the immigrants or whatever. Ugh. I'm sure at a certain point they look around and I'm like, well, where are the immigrants that have all that money they took from you? Because I'm sure comparatively you're doing much better than them. So please explain where that money went. I will challenge you to a thought experiment and look at how your bosses live and look at how the people above them live, because that might be where your money's going, not these other downtrodden people that your bosses have very skillfully convinced you is the root cause of your lack of opportunity when the whole time it was them. And I think maybe that's what people are starting to see with the Kardashians. It was like, it was them. That's, yeah, fuck this.
Yeah. And I mean, this has been the period of, you know, in addition to buying into that world of celebrity and like, yeah, us and the woke celebrities are on the same side. Fox News has like given the alternate, like you were saying, Miles, the immigrants took our jobs explanation. And hopefully we're coming to an end of that where like people aren't coming up with these like bullshit polarization ideas where we're just buying into, I'm for the celebrities and you're for Sean Hannity. And it's like, no, those, they're the same side and they can go literally fuck themselves. Yeah. Jake, it's been great having you, man.
Yeah, man, thank you so much.
Where can people find you, follow you, hear you, all that good stuff?
Normally on Twitter at Jake_Hanrahan. That's my surname's annoying. It's HANRAHAN. On my website, jakehanrahan.com, you'll see all my work there.
Nice. And is there a tweet or some other work of social media you've been enjoying?
Today I saw my friend posted it. Kowloon, the walled city. I think it was in Hong Kong like years ago. They just kept building up and up and up, and it was like a slum, but it was like up, you know, and it was so cool. And then someone found some rare photos and was just like tweeting a thread of that out today, and it's just amazing. It's knocked down now, but really cool, man.
Nice. Miles, where can people find you? What's the tweet you've been enjoying?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray, and also my other podcast, 420 Day Fiance, where I escape reality by diving into reality television, as one is wont to do. Okay, now let's see a tweet that I like. Let's go with this one from past guest Tamara Yahia. At Dances with Tamis, she tweets, "My sister is watching The Newsroom and thinks Jeff Daniels is Dave Coulier." She said, "She said, good for him. It's nice to see him doing a dramatic role. No one is correcting her."
All right, some tweets I've been enjoying. There's one that's a visual thing that people can just find on my feed because I retweeted it from Rob Delaney. It's just a video where he said, "This is insanely impressive." It's a physical stunt that is very impressive. People should check it out. Paula V. Ganalan, a former guest, tweeted, "Legends were just the loudest men at the time." And then Patrick Monahan tweeted, "They call me Mr. Says thanks multiple times in the same email before signing off. Thanks." identified that.
You ever, before you send, you're like, fuck, I gotta get rid of a couple of these things.
if I have time to reread an email before I send it, yeah, it's usually to make it less profusely like, yes sir,
thank you, thank
here you.
You
go sir, thank you thank you, we appreciate it, thank you for reading this, have
it's
a good
always
day.
A thanks
thank
sandwich
you,
the first word is thanks, and the last word is thanks. Thanks. And thanks for that. Thanks again, Jack. Thanks.
You ever
just
send like a
escalating
a double
exclamation
LOL?
Points? Yeah, double
right,
LOL.
Right.
Double LOL is just, I've done it so many times.
There's times when I'm conflicted about using an exclamation point. I'm like, do I really mean to be this excited about it? Or should I be real with them and use a period so they know where I'm at emotionally with this?
Thanks. As opposed to thanks. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's totally thanks. Different.
Yeah.
But people do need to check out that Rob Delaney thing because it's the most I've been laughing at a tweet probably in months. You can find me on Twitter at Jack_O'Brien. You can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes. Where we link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as the song we ride out on. Miles, what are we riding out on today?
We're going to go out on a track by Slow Tie featuring James Blake and Mount Kimby. It's
are
called Feel Away.
No,
he's from where I'm from. Slow Tie is from where I'm from.
Oh yeah, I mean, yeah. Look, I love UK music. I love all music. That's so cool. You know, I've been on a sort of drill kick recently as well. But yeah, this track's like it's got it all. You got James Blake, you got Slow Tie, you got that Mount Kimby feeling. So this is called Feel Away because I think yeah, we're just trying to feel away whatever we're feeling. So good title for and a good time.
Feel it away. Feel it away. All right, The Daily Zeitgeist is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. That is going to do it for this morning. We'll be back this afternoon to tell you what's trending, and we will talk to y'all then. Bye.
Bye.
Suddenly, the half a man I used to be, but you feel me, half a bitch you couldn't be. It's not you, so I guess it's me. It's not you, so I guess it's me. Suddenly, I'm half a man I used to be. But you feel me, half a bitch you couldn't be.
time out. This time out. This time out.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We're the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.